This Week in Radiotech is supported in part by Bill Meeks at meeksmixedmedia.com, video editing, animation, and web design. Also supported by the Telos Group of Companies, Telos, Omnia, Axia, and Linear Acoustic, on the web at telos-systems.com. And by Radio Systems, makers of the Studio Hub system, on the web at radiosystems.com.
And now, our feature presentation,
Twirt.
Does anybody know what Chris Tobin is talking about?
You can put your alligator clips, either butt set if you choose.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
It's a special Tom Free version of Twirt with Chris Tarr, Chris Tobin, and our special guest, Dan Braverman.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Radio Tech, Twirt. This is episode number 21, and we've got quite a good show for you tonight. Unfortunately, Tom Ray is not here to bring us his usual frivolity, but we got somebody to replace him. It's Dan Braverman. We'll introduce him very shortly. First of all, welcome into the show. This Week in Radio Tech is the show that will leave you feeling better in the morning than you felt going to bed that night. We'll tell you all about radio broadcasting, audio technology, RF transmission technology. And on this show, we're going to talk about gadgets that help engineers do their job better. We're also going to take a look at a little bit of the history of audio consoles, how an audio console is designed, and some pretty cool inventions from a company called Radio Systems and my friend Dan Braverman. So that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, let's introduce the other guests. Well, I'm Kirk Harnack. I work for the folks at Telos, Omnia, and Axia. And for years, I ran a little contract engineering business called Harnack Engineering. I'm part owner of four radio stations. I own the part that doesn't make any money. And that's enough about me. Let's take it over to Chris Tobin in Manhattan. Hi, Chris. You there?
Hello, Kirk. I'm doing fine. Yes, I'm here. I'm employed, gainfully employed by the CBS Radio Corporation. We have six radio stations here in New York City, three AMs and three FMs. Three of the AMs, two of them are all news, one's all sports, and the FMs are top 40, AC, hot AC, and an oldies format. So we're kept very busy.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. And also with us tonight from, I guess, Milwaukee would be Chris Tarr, the Ninjaneer. Are you there, Chris?
I am here. Yes, absolutely.
Hey, good to see you. What's the no shirt all about?
I just tried to, put something. I had the Ninjaneer shirt last week, and I was trying to think of what I was going to wear this week, and I found this in my dresser. So I figured I'd put that on for tonight.
I think Steve Gibson is copying you.
You know, I think maybe it's the other way around. You know, Steve Gibson's much cooler than I am.
And joining us tonight, our special guest is Dan Braverman, a man that I've known for, yikes, I hate to say, have I known you for 25 years, Dan?
I think so, Kirk. Talking to you this evening from my home in Philadelphia, waiting our foot of snow to arrive tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. I hope I get out of Toronto. I'm in Toronto, was visiting radio stations here, seeing some customers and making some acquaintances and remaking some others. So that's what's in the background, downtown Toronto. No, I'm not at the Olympics. I'm at the Sheraton in downtown Toronto, but try to turn the room around and make the background look kind of nice. Well, let's jump right into our show. First of all, on the show, we're going to talk about some gadgets that make engineers' lives easier, troubleshooting gadgets and things that you know, we'll find out where the trouble is and where we're going with it. And Chris Tobin wanted to talk about that this evening and also provided us with a few pictures. So, Chris, why don't you kind of give us a preview of what you're talking about with us on terms of troubleshooting gadgets, and I'll see if I can get your photos ready to put on our GoToMeeting connection.
Excellent. Well, one of the things I always come across lately, we have six radio stations in one building, 72 racks of equipment. A lot of things can go wrong. A lot of things can go very well. So I've tried to put together a little bag full of gadgets, if you will. And one of the things I found that works really nicely, and when Kirk gets a picture up, you'll see it visually, but it's called the Q-Box from Worldwin. And you're probably familiar with it. I'm sure a lot of folks are. But the nice thing about it, it has in it XLR connectors, male and female, so you can put audio in, take audio out. It has a built-in speaker, so you can quickly troubleshoot by listening. And the nice part about it is because it's XLR in and out, or you could use a headphone jack, quarter-inch jack, you make up cables. So I have another picture that Kirk can show, but we'll start with the first one, which I think is the Bantam cable.
I'm just about to get that on the screen now.
Good.
Sorry,
good.
I was slow in doing that. I think that's I'm right. sharing that now with the studio over over GoToMeeting if they're getting that. Let's see. You are. Well, that's no good. So let's try this. Let me make sure we're in the right in the meeting. You know, it's possible that because I had the disconnect that the meeting got disconnected. So let me see. Yeah. Let's see.
No problem. Along with the Q box, you can use various cables to test things out very quickly, and the pictures will show that in a moment.
Okay.
It's one of the items.
Tell you what, if you go ahead and give the description, remember, we do have a very popular podcast that's audio only.
Yes.
So let me see if
that's
I can...
We're we'll work with the auditory part of the program.
Yeah.
The cable that I'm describing is an XLR male cable with a Bantam tiny telephone, you know, TT Bantam at the other end. Very popular now on phone company equalized radio circuit amplifiers, the new PCAUs, that the Pulsecom products that do the digital APTX algorithm across the radio circuit for 8K and 15K lines. So the nice thing is you take this Bantam cable, you plug it into the Q-Box, and now you can monitor the audio being sent into the phone line for your transmission or receiving it. So right away you'll know exactly where the problem lies if it's on the incoming phone line or the outgoing amplifier from your audio switcher if you're using one of the console feeding the phone line. That's the first one that you have a good time with. So you have male and female. So you have an ins and outs. You keep that in a tool bag. And then you have, along with the Q-Box, the ability to generate tone. So if you need to, quickly, you have somebody at your transmitter site or maybe the phone company's listening at the other end, you can quickly use that Bantam cable, plug it into the Q-Box, turn on the tone, and feed them tone at various levels. Plus 4, 0, and I think minus 20 are the options. That's the first quickie with the Q-Box. So then the next box to use, if you have AES plant, and many of us do, then you have from Ward Beck, the BitBuddy. I don't have that picture, but the BitBuddy is great. You plug in your AES connection, and right away with the LED display, the LEDs will indicate the parameters that are missing or that are working properly on your AES signal. So again, you can see right away what's going on. And that box has a headphone jack with a headphone amp.
Hey, Chris, we just got the so I think John can put the Q-Box on the line for you. Is that right, John?
Excellent. That go up online? I don't have video on my end, so you just have to let me know when the video is up, the picture's up.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, actually, I can't show the picture and the video at the same time.
Oh, no.
It looked good.
It looks good? All right.
Yep, looks good.
All right. Good. Excellent. All right.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, that's the Q-Box. You wanted to show a couple other things.
If you want to show the Bantam cable,
well,
that's imaged.
What would I show now? I think I can.
Which image do you have up now?
Go. There's the Bantam cable. Oh, okay.
Okay.
The Bantam cable, so it's got XLR on it. And Bantam on the, now, what's between a Bantam and a quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve, like a headphone jack, a headphone plug?
It looks like a headphone, but it's a tiny telephone. It's a TT.
It's a tip-ring
sleeve. Yeah, if you're familiar with the PJ51s, the larger quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve patch bay, okay, we'll say the quarter-inch patch bays, this is the newer one that came out many years later, which is the tiny telephone, TT.
Takes up a lot less room in the rack, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
So to go,
but it's a very popular connector on a lot of telephone circuits.
In a large environment like at CBS Radio in New York, you're going to have patch bays with these TT jacks in them, right? And so this cable lets you take that audio that you're going to pick up from that jack and run it into, I guess, either what, a BitBuddy or just an analog audio amp, depending on the
amp. Yeah, you could do the BitBuddy on the analog input port, or you can use the Q-Box and you get the same results on the analog port. BitBuddy gives you both digital AES or analog. The Q-Box is strictly analog. But this is one of many cables you can make or purchase, and then you have it in your kit. So, you know, you do quarter-inch, minis, whatever you choose. The nice thing is the Q-Box is very handy. All right. So now if you pop up the picture for the Krone winged test adapter, the image number 4, the Krone block, very popular, but ADC, I think, bought out the Krone company, so you don't see too many of them around. But if you do have them, this little adapter is excellent. It lets you pop, you know, plug right into the Krone cross point. You can put your alligator clips onto that, either a butt set if you choose for audio listening, or again, the Q-Box or BitBuddy could be thrown across that.
Now Chris, you can help me out here. In my own engineering career, I never engineered a station where we used Krone blocks. We would more typically use the good old Siemens 66 blocks.
Yes, so, Siemens, the 66 are quite popular. Some of the test adapters are still available for them.
Well, I never used a test adapter. I would just take your alligator clips from a headset or from an amplifier and put them across the 66 connectors themselves. So what advantage does a Krone block? Why do stations and engineers use Krone blocks instead of 66 blocks?
Ah, excellent. A Krone block is a mini patch bay. If you buy the Krone blocks, you can patch into a circuit, you can break the circuit, or you can just leave it bridged with this adapter. It stays you're bridging across. You can actually create patch cords using Krone connectors. And then you can go from one block point to another block point and create a patch.
So you're saying a Krone connector, a Krone patch cable, can break a connection when you plug it onto the Krone block?
Yes.
Unlike 66, where you might have bridging clips across the left and right side of the 66 block. Okay.
Right.
So this will break it mechanically, automatically.
Right, right. And it's very nice because you can literally, you have adapters that the Krone test adapters have the cables, pigtails on them. So you have a pigtail for one side of the circuit to the other side. You can break the circuit, insert audio, do whatever you like. Again, for testing purposes, real quick, it's handy. It's very handy.
Chris, in an installation where you're putting in, let's say, an IP audio network system, like you've had an Axia system at CBS Radio, would you be using Krone blocks in wiring that up, or would you wire directly to the edge devices, the audio nodes in a system like that?
It depends on how large. I mean, you could go directly to the edge device. I mean, in the installation that I've done with the Axia system, the need for a patch bay to break into the circuit is very minimal. It's actually almost not necessary. But if you need to go with the Krone because your plant size requires it, or maybe your IT infrastructure, you just want to have it, if you call up picture image number 06, you can see that there's a...
Sure.
These are for 110 blocks, but they make them for Krone. I just couldn't get the picture.
My pictures end at 05 for some reason. I'm sorry. I have 1 through 5. I do have a picture of the Shure line input adapter.
That was something else I was going to talk about. A lot of times you may need to test a mic input, but you only have a line device to test it with, say like the Q-Box line output. You take this line adapter. It's a 50 dB attenuator. It's designed for a mic level, a line device to be brought down to mic level. You take the output of your Q-Box, put on the lowest setting for tone, and you plug it into your mic input, and now you have audio going right through the mic circuit.
So this gives you a tone on a mic input, so you can test that mic input
all the way
wherever it goes.
Yes. Now, again, you can put all this in a little bag, you know, a Jensen tool bag if you want to use a brand name, or just any little bag, and you have these things, and you can quickly get to a studio, around your rack room, whatever you might be doing, and quickly troubleshoot right away what's going on. I do this, you know, every week with various things that come up. We've got 25 different studios, 72 racks of equipment, and you know, miles of cable. And once in a while, something goes amiss, and these little accessories help a lot.
So do you typically find that when you're troubleshooting, you might end up with, I guess engineers might call it an air gap. You might have a cable that is you think is punched down into a cross connect, and it's not really punched down, or it's maybe mispunched down?
Yeah, well, yes.
Okay, so these tools
will help you find that, because you'll be listening in one end to the other, and you'll be like, oh, wow. And then the next step would be to use actual tools that you should already have. You know, these if you're putting in Krone 66 blocks, 110 blocks, you typically have these punch tools already. And the other thing is, speaking of the punch tools, always make sure the blades are sharp, so don't be fooled if you say, I've got this tool now for, you know, 10 years, it's great. If it's 10 years, the blades are dull, and you're not going to get the proper punch. And you'll be getting yourself awoken on many a night for that.
I'm pretty sure the 66 punch tool in my toolbox is 20 years old. I don't think it's ever been sharpened.
Well, you'll know.
So
right away.
The tools that you're showing us with the Krone blocks, are these kind of things in use now at the CBS radio facility in New York?
Yes. Yes.
Every day?
Well, yes. They sit on a small hook near the telecom racks, and when you need to check something real quick, you just grab it and plug it in and test it out. Yes. Matter of fact, I was using them this morning.
So you've got, I take it, a fair amount of analog audio in your plant, but you also have AES digital audio.
Yes.
Are there things that you can troubleshoot about AES without having a bit buddy, which is just, you know, lets you hear the AES audio? What are some of the things that you can check without having a bit buddy about AES?
Not too much. To be honest with you, because with AES, if you're not careful, your methods of trying to troubleshoot it will actually cause more problems and put you down the wrong path. let me see. I'm trying to think if there's another way around if you don't have a BitBuddy. What I've done in the past is a real, you know, quickie. Find a consumer or a professional device that has AES capabilities and make a long cable, and you could use that to listen for AES audio. I've done that with Tascam cart machines, not cart machines, CD players and CD recorders and DAT recorders. And then you'll know right away if you've got good audio or bad, because if there's any slip bits, the VU meters or the bar graph will read dropouts. You'll hear it in the audio as well. But, you know, AES, you really do need to go with the proper test tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's forgiving, but if there's something a little bit wrong, then you're going to get a hum or a buzz or a lower level and maybe no bass if you have a balanced circuit with one side open. With digital, it tends to just go away completely, doesn't it, if there's a problem like that?
Yes, we had recently a D to AAD converter on an AES box just go south, and the audio just went away, and then about 20 seconds later would come back, it mute, come back, mute, that was it, and then just stopped. Where, you know, with analog, you're right, you get a hum, a hiss, you know, audio equalization, it sounds off, but at least there's something there. You know, digital just goes away.
You know, somehow here in this year of 2010, it's to me, it just seems a little bit old-fashioned that we're still putting a butt set or an amplifier across something. But a lot of this infrastructure is necessary to bring, I guess, so many sources and destinations into a given area. Is that what you find?
Yes. What I find is it's culture. There's no reason to be using Krone blocks in most facilities past the phone DMARC, the telecom DMARC. There's just no need for it. But it's just, again, our culture, our industry, if you will, the phrase, teaching old dogs new tricks is just not happening. And you find a lot of places. Our facility was done based on a model 4, maybe 5 years ago. That's why we're using them. If I was doing it today, no need for it. No need whatsoever.
Let's bring Chris Tarr into the conversation here and ask him about in Milwaukee at Entercom and the other stations that you look after. Chris Tarr, what are some of the tools that you use day to day besides a hammer and a screwdriver for doing troubleshooting around your plants?
Oh, before I go into that, I just want to say hi to Mart on the IRC channel. He was joking before that the no on my shirt is because that's what engineers always say when asked, you know, if they can fix something, is no. So just want to get, hi, Mark. No, it's not in my vocabulary. That's why I'm called an engineer. Other than what Chris has said, now I do a lot of work with RF, with transmitters and tower sites and things like that. One thing that I found real invaluable, and I actually mentioned this on Twitter earlier today, is I have a Yaesu VX7R amateur radio. It's a little handheld 2-meter and wideband handy talkie. And what's kind of neat about that is it's wideband reception, so you can listen to just about everything. And a little secret with these, and, you know, it's not really, you know, a kosher thing to do, but a lot of guys do it, is you can open it up, and it can transmit on different frequencies. Yeah, kind of like the Kenwood there.
Ah!
And, what works well for it is that it's great for troubleshooting STLs and troubleshooting RPU
absolutely.
Boxes. Yeah, and, if you're trying to listen into, you know, your STL feeds, things like that, but even... For example, you know, when you can open up the transmit on it, you dial the power down to, you know, 500 milliwatts or whatever, you can check the reception on your RPUs, you know, it'll move up into that frequency. So I find that very valuable, carrying that around for even just if I'm working on audio for one of the stations, I'll make sure I didn't, you know, yank something off the air inadvertently. I can have the radio station on, and it receives AM and FM and weather and all these other things. So it really is kind of a... It's also got this neat little built-in, they call it a spectrum analyzer. Really what it does is it scans the band and looks for activity. But even things like that, if you're, you know, setting up a remote, you want to see if anybody's nearby on your RPU or something that's causing problems. It just really is. It's like the Swiss Army knife of RF tools. I carry it with me wherever I go.
It's funny that there are proper tools to troubleshoot RF systems, usually consisting of an RF spectrum analyzer, or if it's an AM system, maybe an ammeter. There's all manner of different tools, but sometimes we use ordinary consumer electronics devices as a proxy for something that we intend to measure. For example, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was doing a lot of contract engineering, I had a radar detector in my car that tended to react quite well to 950 megahertz STL systems at radio stations. So radio stations would often have a small transmitter, 950 megahertz, to send send their audio to the transmitter site. And I could drive up to a radio station and tell right away if the STL was working or not. And it was, you know, a little confidence thing there. Yep, beep, 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 the radar detector's going off. The STL is working fine. And, of course, this happened when I drove up to a station and they were off the air. I could quickly find out, my radar detector didn't beep, so maybe I should go look at the STL system first. Let me ask about a couple other rules of thumb. When you're troubleshooting, let's say you've been called to a radio station. And I'll ask Chris Tarr first, since this you might go to a contracted station that you might do some work for. And you roll up to the station, they've complained about something, not, either being off the air or some bad audio on the air. What kind of things can you determine before you even get to the radio facility? What can you determine about what might be wrong just by listening to the transmitter, which may still be on? Maybe the stereo pilot is on, but there's no audio. Or maybe the stereo pilot is not on, but the transmitter is on. What kind of things can you determine before you even get there about where you're going to look first?
Oh, that's great. That's a great question. First of all, how is the signal? I mean, is the signal as strong as you normally remember it to be? And even more so, if they're off the air, can you hear the exciter? You know, is at least that part of it working? There's audio getting to the transmitter. The transmitter is not completely dead. You're getting, you know, a couple of watts out of the exciter. That's for the first telltale sign if you're going to generally have a really bad day, are you off the air completely? If you are on the air and it's an audio issue, you do things like look for the pilot, listen for, you know, is there a channel out of phase? Is there, you know, put the radio in mono if you can. And a lot of times when you're driving in, a dirty little secret about car radios is most of them have a mono blend when you're, you know, coming in and they get into kind of bad areas for reception. The stereo pilot light will stay on, but the channels will actually blend to mono. And a lot of times you can tell right away if there's a phase issue, like wiring is out of phase or something like that, and the audio gets real hollow. So there's a lot of things like that before you even get to the building that you can tell. But, you know, one of the biggest ones is just to see if the exciter's on as you pull up. You know, is the transmitter actually on, but just no high voltage?
Mr. Tobin, how about you? Some telltale things, that signs that you look for when you are called in for troubleshooting?
Well, at the transmitter sites, what I've done, we've set up little placards at the transmitter or on the front of the transmitters with the standard parameters that you can quickly look at on the front panel. So I use that to quickly look up and say, okay, in the case of the AMs, where's my common point power? Am I at full power, half, or low power? I know right away, so I can quickly look. So 2 o'clock in the morning, that's the first thing you want to know, is the proper numbering rather than just assuming you remember because you're kind of groggy. The other thing I look for is sounds with the AM sites. If you don't hear a certain sound of audio coming out of the transmitter, you know right away you've lost audio from the studio side. We've got five different paths, so we have them on a selector panel. I can just quickly look and listen using a product from Titus Labs. It has a metering on it. You can select the different sources coming in. At the studios, that's a whole nother game. It's so many computers. It's just a question of, is it turned on?
which computer is it? You know, we could talk a lot more about troubleshooting, but I really want to bring in our guest for tonight, and he can tell us about troubleshooting also. He certainly troubleshot a lot of radio station in his time, and that's Dan Braverman from Philadelphia. Hi, Dan. Are you with us?
I'm still here.
All right. Well, Dan is the president and owner of a company called Radio Systems. And Radio Systems has been around a while. Started out, Dan, were you guys doing college radio stations, transmitters, things like that?
I promised my staff, who was mandatory listening to your program tonight, Kirk, that I wouldn't embarrass or bore them by going way back. But the fact is, it started at summer camp about 40 years ago. So even before college radio. But summer camp was low power radio and carrier current, and then that led naturally to carrier current and an AM at Temple University, my alma mater in Philadelphia, and at college radio stations. And actually, no, I need to put something in between that, which was, believe it or not, drive-in radio sound. Many, many, many years ago, when there were still drive-ins in this country, there were big problems with people stealing speakers. And I latched onto the idea of coupling into the underground speaker wiring with low-power AM transmitters. And we weren't manufacturing at the time, but my friend Dick Crompton at LPV Broadcasting loaned me a transmitter. And we started the first drive-in radio theater sound system. And that's actually how we sort of got into the business.
Well, I can sure tell you, if I was going to steal a speaker, it would definitely be a drive-in radio speaker.
Yeah.
So tell you what, Dan, without spending too much time in the distant past, I started working with you when stations that I owned bought a used radio systems console. And we had to fix a couple little things on it, and it worked just great for years. Take us start at that point, and then bring us through your studio hub idea, an idea that has caught on at radio stations all around the world. And in fact, the company that I work for, Telos Omnia Axia, we've even built some of our gear to be compliant with your studio hub wiring idea. And then I'm going to just let you go ahead and talk for a while because my connection's not so good and yours is a bit better. And then take us on into the consoles and the things you guys are doing nowadays. When you want some pictures up, I've got most of them ready to go, Dan. So you call for it and I'll see if I can get it up for you.
Terrific. Did you download the most recent stack of pictures I sent you about 20 minutes ago?
I did. I've got them all except for the last few that were rather large. And my connection here is not going to let me do that and be on the air at the same time. But I've got most of them.
Okay, terrific. Well, let's see. You'll have to cut me off. That's a long range. Let's see. As a brief introduction, Radio Systems is right up the road here. We're at our sixth or seventh location since we started 35 years ago. But right now we're in beautiful Logan Township in New Jersey, just across the Delaware River here from Philadelphia. We've done a lot of things, Kirk, over 35 years. We've been adaptable and flexible. But started out in low-power radio broadcasting, college radio. There's not too much carrier current left, but we still are the number one manufacturer of low-power AM transmitters. A distributor we have in Zeeland, Michigan, information station specialist, installs just about every one of these tune 5:30 a.m. Roadside radio stations. So it's a little known tidbit in the broadcast business that we do all these low power AM transmitters still to this day. But after college radio, we began to realize that that we knew enough to get into what was intimidating to us at the time, commercial broadcasting, and started making our first broadcast studio products. We started with a phono preamplifier. Remember Bono, a thousand years ago?
I remember that.
There you go.
Turntables, right?
There you go. From there, we made distribution amplifiers. We made, and then we made our first console, the ESA-10. So for electronic step attenuator. And by the way, Kirk, I appreciate that you own a radio systems old console, but it's really time to throw that away and buy a new one, okay? It's amazing. I mean, there are thousands of ESA-10s, which is a 30-year-old product, still on the air. People call and are sometimes perturbed that we don't still have all the parts in stock. But I guess we should be honored that that these things are still being used and still dependable. After that, the RS series, a series of consoles and Millennium series of consoles. So we've been in the console business for a long time, and we've been an integrator of radio stations for a long time. I think our claim to fame is that we installed the largest, what everybody is fairly certain, is the largest broadcast facility in the world, which is XM Satellite Radio, just down the road from us here in Washington, D.C. But frankly, the reason that we got involved with XM Satellite Radio and got to work with Tony Masiello and their fabulous crew down at XM was not because of consoles or our long-term reputation in integration, but because of Studio Hub. And that's probably a good introduction. There should be a studio hub. Oh, there you go. Thank you, Kirk. Is that slide back up, Kirk?
I've got a studio hub adapter on the screen now. So this is the adapter that goes from XLR to RJ.
Studio hub is one of those why didn't somebody think of this before ideas? You know, it's about standards in this business. The old joke we use, and hopefully all your listeners haven't heard it yet, is that broadcast loves standards. That's why there's so many of them. And there never really was a wiring standard. You know, in other industries, there's MIDI and there's SMPTE and AES. In broadcasting, there never really was a wiring standard. And frankly, I take until Studio Hub, I think it really was my fault, the fault of broadcast manufacturers that spend really much more time competing, especially us console manufacturers, than they did cooperating and ever coming up with a wiring standard. I mean, heck, we still can't agree on which pin is high on an XLR.
Yeah. So, pin three, know. Pin three. No, that's in Europe.
Sorry. Yeah, no. George Washington Bridge. I think that makes it pin two. But it's true. Pin three is still hot in some parts of Europe. So Studio Hub was a concept where we were inspired, borrowed, stole, whichever word you want to use, a wiring standard from an industry much bigger than ours, where they really agreed on the standard, which was Cat5 and RJ45 and, of course, the IT business. We borrowed what we could from that industry because it already existed and because since it was made in much greater quantities, made much less expensively, and adapted it for broadcast use. I tell a story at SBE's when they'll let me talk. I'll abbreviate it for the sake of this conversation of how Studio Hub got started, but it's a true story that we were hired to do an integration. I think it was for Clear Channel in Roanoke, West Virginia. And it was, of course, you know, the fourth or fifth night of cold pizza and engineers that would much prefer to be home, you know, working late because, you know, wiring a radio station still to this day is a science project of pulling out, you know, 10 different manufacturers' manuals and trying to interface equipment that should be plug and play and is not. And while we were sweating it and eating cold pizza and burning holes in the carpet with soldering irons and trying to move equipment over the holes in the carpet so the management wouldn't see what we had done, you know, in walked some 16-year-old, 18-year-old kid from the local internet company whose job it was to wire the profit automation system. And I saw him come in the door, and 4 hours later, I saw him leaving. And I said, hey, you know, this thing's got to be done. We're supposed to go on the air in 2 days. And he said, oh, it's done. I said, yeah, you show me. Because, hey, if we didn't have a network, you know, we weren't going to get this thing on the air. So he brings me into this closet, which a few hours earlier was a bunch of unterminated wires. And sure enough, here's a Cisco router plugged in, and here's a bunch of green lights blinking. And I asked the kid if it worked, and he says, well, I don't know, but they give me these test sets, and I plug it together, and if I get two green lights on each side, I guess it's working, right? I said, I guess so, and he leaves. And, you know, I look down the hall, and there's all these, you know, tired broadcast engineers on their fifth night sweating. And I see this kid that's done this installation and gotten it done in 4 hours. And I think, what is wrong with this picture? Well, what was wrong with this picture is obvious. You know, companies like Cisco and Nortel got together and they invented a standard that could be installed efficiently and easily. And I said, hey, I want that. So like I said, we borrowed as much of it as we could and made the adapters necessary for audio. And Studio Hub was born, a really simple system. It's true. Axia was a very earlier adopter of Studio Hub, and I think it's been a great selling point for Axia consoles. Since then, Broadcast Tools, Logitech, Wheatstone, among companies that are frankly fierce competitors, one of the few things in common with all of their equipment is a Studio Hub wiring system. You can actually go down to Home Depot, buy a Cat5 cable, plug it from the output of a Axia router into a Studio Hub radio system's headphone panel, and it works. And who knows? One day, maybe even plug a Wheatstone node into a Axia node because they all use Studio Hub and actually have these standards communicate. It would be a beautiful thing.
Well, yeah, and in the development of Axia in the early days, I'm just saying this because I know it. The first nodes that we came up with, these are the devices that convert audio into IP streams and IP streams back into audio. We had a D sub 9 pin connectors, And these are just terrible to work with. You either have to have an expensive crimping tool or burn your fingers a lot with solder to make the plugs for these. And I suggested, I said, guys, can we maybe use this Studio Hub stuff on the back of our equipment? And, well, lo and behold, I think they got together with you and decided this would be a good idea. And so it's easy to hook up things like Axia gear and like other systems as well that use the same connectors.
This is Chris in New York. We used Studio Hub to install an Axia system several years ago, and I can attest that the Studio Hub approach makes total sense. It's brilliant. And that myself and the production director actually built out 4 studios of Axia using Studio Hub and subsequently troubleshot the system throughout its time. And I was able to walk people through, had no real background in engineering. Production director happens to have his own home studio, does tinker a little bit, so he has a little understanding of what goes on with the ins and outs of things. And it was the best way to go. And I've actually suggested to other folks who've called me back to say they too have taken the approach, and it paid off. And, you know, Cisco, Nortel, and all the others who do have used RJ45s, it makes sense. You do have to rethink how you build your plant. You have to sort of break out of the box, the mold of what you're accustomed to, and think outside the box. But it works. It works really well.
Thanks, Chris. When we suggested Studio Hub, and I guess it's been 10 years now, you know, we thought we were going to be tarred and feathered for not suggesting Belden 8451 and XLRs. But I can't tell you how often after making my spiel in SVE, someone would come up to me and say, hey, you know, I've been using Twisted Pair forever at my station. It sort of turned out to be everybody's secret that you didn't need expensive digital cable or 8451 to make this stuff works. A Twisted Pair is this gorgeous a panacea. It's cheap because it's made in such quantities for the IT industry. Cat 5 turns out to work great for digital audio, of course, because basically that's what it's made for. Its crosstalk specifications are fabulous as long as you carefully balance your audio in analog. And there has been some confusion, frankly, long ago about the fact that a Twisted Pair, a Cat 5, technically is 100 ohms, where the ASCBU spec is 110 ohms. And we occasionally get someone that's concerned about that. But we're able to explain that that the cables would have to be, you know, over 10 miles long before that 10 ohms of impedance made a bit of a difference. And I think at this point, I probably shouldn't have even brought it up. It's become a non-issue that Cat 5 is this really universal, cheap, great conductor of everything from DC to light or close.
So Dan, on my screen here, and if they want to put this up at the studio, I've got a page from your StudioHub.com website. Which, by the way, needs the triple W in front of it, www.studiohub.com, and you can get to it from the Radio Systems website as well. So here are some examples of the different kind of adapters that you guys make. Dan, can you kind of just take us through how in a Studio Hub studio you would connect, say, a CD player to maybe one of your audio consoles, one of the Radio Systems audio consoles? How does that, what parts do you need?
Sure. One of our customers calls the process hubifying. Basically, most companies are not as smart as Axia. I'll give you a plug there, Kirk. Most companies are not yet putting RJ45s as their audio output directly from the factory. So the first job of Studio Hub is to adapt or convert the XLR, or worse yet, the D connector from whatever they've got on it to RJ45. The first thing is to get it to RJ45. So, Kirk, I don't know if you can do this live, but we make a whole series of what we call dongles because they look like the old computer security dongles you put on a printer board. And what a dongle does is convert a D connector to RJ45. And thank you. Perfect. Everybody hates D connectors. I mean, a DB15 or a DB9 ain't that bad. But as you can see from the lower illustration there, you know, I think that's for an old Klotz engine there, where, you know, instead of wiring DB37s and worse, we make adapters for every D connector out there, for every audio card, for every satellite receiver, most of which still use D connectors. For everybody still putting D connectors on your product, whether it's analog or digital, you plug it in and it's immediately adapted to RJ45. Not only are you, of course, not struggling with the with wiring a deconnector, but now you've got, like Chris said, of a chrome block, you've got a little bit of a patch panel immediately. So if one of your eight outputs from your audio card is dead, instead of shutting the whole thing down by unplugging the deconnector, you simply unplug one deconnector, plug a butt set or a bit buddy in, listen to the output, and right away you know exactly if you've got audio on that individual output. You plug an RJ45 in and you're ready to go. You know, it's unfortunate, but it's not news that most radio stations don't have a full-time engineer there anymore. I can't tell you how often, in a customer service standpoint, which I still do at my company because I like it, and I think it's good experience for the president to get on the phone and talk directly to customers that are having issues or problems. And, you know, and I occasionally will use big words like a balanced output or a crimp tool, and they say, hey, you're talking to the GM or you're talking to the PD, you know, don't confuse me. What do I do? And with Studio Hub, I get to say, well, unplug connector 5 and plug it into connector 6 and see if you still got audio. So it becomes a wonderful troubleshooting and well, plug and play availability for stations where there's not an engineering crew there first time. My favorite story about XM, which I still think about fondly, of course, because facilities the size of XM don't come along every day, is that we spent the first 3 months wiring those 110 studios hubifying, you know, plugging dongles and adapters on every piece of equipment that was there. Then we went out to Home Depot, bought 52, I still remember the quantity, a big, clean, green, new trash cans, lined them down these hallways, got a big fat Sharpie, wrote 1 foot on one trash can, 2 foot on the next, 6 foot, 5 foot on the next, and filled them all full of pre-made patch cords and ran around at that point, plugged the largest facility in the world together with the same patch cord, whether it was analog or digital or remote control, and turned it all on, and it worked.
Go ahead, Chris Tobin.
I was going to say, on the topic of the dongles and the satellite receivers at our facility, we've got about half a dozen, we're approaching about eight, and we've been using the dongles successfully for several years. And Dan is right, it's very convenient. You just pop out the RJ, move it around. There's an issue with a audio source or not. If you got a troubleshoot, it's been very handy. And a mini patch bay, if you'd like. We've had a few times we needed to do a quick recording off the down feed, and we just go to the back of the rack, undo the RJ45, pop in a MP3 recorder, and off we go. So it's been a brilliant design, and it has really paid off. But again, you got to think out of the box, because DB connectors are the staple for many, and I got into many an argument with folks. What are you doing? What is this device? This is not good. It's plastic. This can't work. 3 years later, it still works.
I'll tell you what, too, when you're working on those satellite receivers, like the the Max receivers or the XDS or something, it's so handy to have those boxes instead of trying to wire up all those connectors. And and like you were saying before, if one channel goes out, especially if you're using a left-right configuration for your satellite receiver, it's just so easy for troubleshooting to just flip the connectors around.
We were, I spoke about worrying about, using Cat 5 as heresy. The other thing we were worried about when we first introduced Studio Hub was just the dependability of a RJ45. I mean, we were afraid people would say, I'm not putting, my program audio through this little plastic telephone connector. But I should probably not mention that anymore either, because I think people have really learned the capability of an RJ45. You know, ironically, unlike a big XLR connector, it is gold-plated by standard. An XLR is not. And I think now that people are using RJ45s more and more for their, their IP and ITSTL systems, and they're already putting, high-frequency, high-data-rate program-level signals through Cat5 and RJ45 connectors, people are really learning to trust them. And to mention XM... And to mention XM for the last time, somebody counted once. I think we're using over 100,000, over 1,000 miles of Cat5, over 100,000 RJ45 connectors. And now with 10 years, the dependability has been pristine. Believe me, we would have heard about it if there were dependability problems. So I think it's pretty well proven.
Someone at Minnesota Public Radio reminded me that every day on the New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges around the world, trillions of, well, maybe billions and billions and billions of dollars of transactions flow over RJ45 connectors. They're probably good enough for digital audio at a radio station.
But, you know, I don't want to make this a complete commercial, although I appreciate it for Cat 5 and for Studio Hub. I want to say that while obviously we would, you know, radio systems would love to sell every piece of wiring infrastructure to a radio station that they needed, we've really tried to make, I should say, to start over, that we understand that wiring is a very personal issue. If you've got the time, you know, wiring every connector the old-fashioned way by hand with XLRs and with Belden cable and chrome blocks is a lovely way to do it. We're not suggesting that that Cat 5 and RJ45s and Studio Hub is the only way to do it. But for that reason, we've really made the system, we've leveled it. If you want to do all of your wiring the traditional way, but just use Studio Hub for tie lines between the studios, that's available. If you want to make all of your own Cat 5 cables because you want them the exact length, but just buy the adapters because they're easier to buy from Studio Hub and plug your own cables into them, of course, you can do it that way as well. So we've tried to make the system that you can pick any pieces of it you want and do the rest of it any way that you're more comfortable and familiar with.
Dan, you've got some great example documents on the Studio Hub website. These actually help me to understand what to recommend to my customers about what to get to hook up their CD players or their speakers or their satellite receivers to an Axia system. So folks can go to www.studiohub.com and have a look at the application papers to see how Studio Hub will work. Now, Studio Hub can be a fairly simple here to their connection, as we've talked about, but there's also things you can do with Studio Hub, like insert power onto one of the pairs to run some outboard accessories, right? Like mic preamps and headphone amps. Tell us about how that kind of stuff fits into a broadcast facility.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It's a cool part of Studio Hub. Like I said, it's kind of a many-layered system. You know, the problem was that Cat 5 has got eight wires in it, four pairs. And Studio Hub basically just uses the first two pairs for left and right balanced analog audio, or even just one pair for AES/EVU balanced. So, my God, there were four unused wires staring at us, you know, and calling our name. We couldn't sleep at night. So what we decided to do was put plus or minus 15 volts, a nice broadcast standard voltage, on the last pair, on pair 7 and 8. And that meant that now we had the ability to remote power all sorts of devices, and we make dozens of them, headphone amplifiers, match jacks. Thanks for bringing that slide up, Kirk. So now instead of, you know, we have some wonderful competition out there that make these balancing boxes under different names, and they work great. But, you know, for us, for me, there was always something wrong with this picture. You go out and you buy yourself a $100 CD player to save money at the station, and it sounds great, but it's not balanced. So then you go and you buy a $250 balancing amplifier to balance the $100 CD player. It just doesn't make any sense. With Studio Hub, because these match jacks don't have power supplies, because they're remote powered, they're really cheap. They're $75 list price. So now you're not paying more to balance the CD player than the cost of the CD player. And that really goes across the line. Inexpensive headphone amplifiers, inexpensive match jacks, D to A and A to D converters, all sorts of cool little panels. Like I said, at Radio Systems, we don't like to invent standards. We like to utilize existing standards. So all of the panels that Kirk's putting up on the screen there now are this Decora Leviton shape. They'll fit in a standard light receptacle. Or, well, you can buy rack mount adapters and plates from us that mount in tabletops. But we haven't reinvented the footprint of these things.
Dan, I didn't realize you had this this monitor amp with speaker panel. That's pretty cool. It's got this little speaker grill.
Yep.
My wife will kill me. But yeah, I'll put these in a few locations around the house.
Right. And all of these things are inexpensive because they don't have power supplies, because they use the central studio power supply that comes over the Cat 5. They're low noise because they don't have power supplies, because, of course, you don't have the hum and noise of a power transformer in the unit. They're lightweight. They're low heat. And not a small thing, if you're trying to do a nice job at a studio and you're wiring a an interview space with these headphone amplifiers, you don't have to dress these wall warts and power supplies and AC up under the table where it doesn't belong, because it's not needed, because the power is all brought in right over the Cat 5. So it's a cool part of Studio Hub. Thanks for bringing it up, Kirk. I would have forgotten to mention it.
Dan, we've got probably just another 5 or 6 minutes to go in the show. And there's a few pictures that you sent me that that we haven't gotten yet. Are there any in particular you'd like to get to?
Yeah, like 100 pictures. I'll tell you what. Why don't we skip over the boring topic of consoles completely? Maybe... if I haven't overstayed my welcome, you'll invite me back one day, and we can talk about consoles. And if you don't mind me changing the topic completely, skip to another favorite thing that I'm in the middle of doing. Can we talk about some international broadcasting?
Let's do it. You got some good pictures here.
Yeah, cool. All of us have been involved in the U.S. and in building these gorgeous big facilities for big groups and satellite services. But over the last couple of years, I've gotten to do something which has been even more gratifying and kind of returned me to my roots, especially while the U.S. is in a downturn in the economy and, of course, in broadcasting. There is amazing stuff happening in the rest of the world in developing countries. We're spoiled here. We think that private broadcasting and independent broadcasting is like breathing, is the way it always was. That's because it's the way it always was in the U.S. But in developing countries, private broadcasting is just starting. I mean, India is building 3,000 radio stations for the first time since private broadcasting was allowed in 2000. And in Africa, specifically, private broadcasting has been doing some amazing things as some of the 50 African countries are allowing private and community broadcasting for the first time. I started an organization called the African Broadcast Alliance. You can put the URL up for that, Kirk, if you don't mind. It's www.africabroadcasting.com.
Okay, we'll have that in the show notes, sir.
It's in the show notes. Great. And we've gotten fabulous support from U.S. broadcast companies and broadcasters all over the United States. Axia, Broadcast Supply West, Broadcast General Store, Shively, Broadcast Electronics are some of the main companies that have donated equipment. And lots of engineers have come over with me to Africa to make some of these installations. Kirk, can you find some slides that are maybe entitled Malawi station slides or Zambia?
I've got Malawi training up on the screen right now.
Great. I don't see it yet. There it is. Cool. This is one of my favorite stations. There's a district in the center of Malawi, which is in East Africa, in Central Africa, just two countries below Kenya. And this is the Machinji district. So this is the first community radio station ever built. And these are some of the local broadcasters. There's some great other slides there about, I think, that are all start with Malawi, Kirk, that you can slip through. That show a little bit about Machinji. I'll put a plug in for my lovely girlfriend who came on the trip. These pictures are taken by Carol Foreman, also available for your wedding photography. Let's put her URL up also, Kirk. But if you can find any of those other slides.
I have the Machinji market at desk, a picture of what kind of place this is.
It's a lovely place. It really is beautiful. If you're not into high rises, but there's a dirt road and there's the main marketplace. So you can see, what something like a radio station would bring to this community. I mean, it kind of redefines, Bacayel, when you think about what they're charging for commercials. They have a microphone. They stretch out of the window of the broadcast facility. I think you can put up another slide there, Kirk. And it shows the radio station with the tower in the background. I'm sorry. I think it's called Malawi View from the Station or View from Tower.
I have View from the Tower.
I climbed to 100 feet. That's my maximum at this thing. And there's dusk just overlooking. As a matter of fact, those lights in the middle there are the Marketplace Street you saw before. This is a cell tower because, of course, cell radio is prolific in most of Africa. So we rented space on a cell tower from the local provider and put up a 300-watt BE transmitter and covered the town. We weren't allowed to stay in town because there was no local hotel that they felt was was trustworthy for a woman to stay at. So we drove into Lilongwe, which is about 100 kilometers up the road there. And we had just coincidentally slipped on a Paul Simon CD the first night we put the station on the air and put it on repeat. And to Sounds of the Saints, we took the drive back into town to see all the way back to Lilongwe to see if it reached the whole distance. As the sun set over the African plains there, it was an amazing drive and an amazing experience. We are, thanks to the donations of a lot of broadcast companies in the United States, continuing to make these installations throughout Africa. Oh, there you go. That is the security fence that surrounds the radio station there. And you can see the tower just at the top of the mountain there that you saw the picture shot from the top of before. You wouldn't believe how 300 watts, 350 watts covered there. And again, made it all the way 100 kilometers, about 50 miles up to Lilongwe, the capital. This was a really gratifying experience. You should log on to the AfricanBroadcast.com. It talks about opportunities and other sites that we're installing throughout Africa. And it sort of redefines broadcast engineering when you're there without a Radio Shack or a Home Depot within 4,000 miles.
You're I've got also the picture from Zambia.
Yeah. Now, here's some cool pictures of Zambia. Zambia is not an installation I did, but this we were working on behalf of an NGO, a non-government organization by the name of, I think this was an EDC installation. It was AIR, the American Institute for Research. These NGOs, non-government organizations, are funded by your tax dollars, by a large umbrella government organization called USAID, the United States Agency for International Development. They spend billions of dollars, and a lot of these dollars are spent with non-government organizations that have broadcast imperatives, that are establishing local broadcast stations, that are doing it for reading and training and health information, and the station in Malawi was one of them. You see any other Malawi pictures there, Kirk? There's a few cool ones.
No, that's all I was able to get down.
Oh, that was the only one that you downloaded. Okay. There's one picture there where for the transmitter that we donated, the local chief is presenting two chickens, to the NGO worker who delivered the transmitter. So, you know,
I do have a picture of, says that the local chief is tuning in. So
he's got a handheld radio here. That's back in Lilongwe. But, you know, this was a great moment. You can see the digital delivery system behind him. The local chief was invited to the station for our first initial broadcast. He tuned in on his transistor radio. He made the welcoming speech. And needless to say, the tribal organization in most of these communities is still critical and important. And we played our politics well when it came to initiating the radio station. That station was on the air 4 years ago. And the sustainability of these installations is everything. Let me tell you something. You haven't seen lightning problems. You haven't seen parts problems. You haven't seen engineering problems until you're doing these kind of installations in the developing world. So, Chris, you would have been all of your little tools would have been really valued and utilized trying to keep this stuff running and on the air.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, you available? We're doing another one in 6 months.
Give me a call. You never know.
Yeah, okay.
I have vacation time coming up.
Guys, we're going to need to wrap it up. I want to thank you all for being here. Chris Tarr, thank you for joining us from the cold, frozen north part of Wisconsin there in Milwaukee.
You're certainly welcome. And be sure to check out everything about me on the web at geekjedi.com.
Geekjedi.com. And as usual, his URL is in the show notes. You also run a forum for broadcast engineers, Chris. Tell us about that.
That is correct. We have an online forum, one great bunch of guys around to answer questions if you want to learn more about broadcast engineering, and that is broadcastengineering.info.
people should go there, sign up, and have a look at some of the comments going on there. Chris Tobin from Manhattan, thank you for always bringing a touch of class to the show.
Well, you're welcome, Kirk. It's my pleasure. I've got comments. People said I didn't have a large enough microphone the last broadcast we did, so I just, my friend Gary, the computer maven, here you go. There it is.
Hey, mine's still bigger than yours, Mr. Tobin. Just saying.
I know. You're just saying. Well, there'll be new changes. It's video. It's visual. We'll change as we go along every week. Just had
Oh, gosh. And Dan Braverman, thank you for being with us from your home in Philadelphia. We appreciate the pictures that you brought. Thanks very much for telling us about your projects in Africa and about Studio Hub.
Kirk, it was a privilege. Thank you for inviting me. I hope to do it again sometime. And I'll sign off from Philadelphia, this suburb of Manhattan.
We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another twerk has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech. Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny LePay Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission. Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango. Signing off. Okay.